Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. And welcome to episode 211 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me as always is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what is going on with you, brother?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing great, especially when I hear that you're doing well. And I think that's the theme. You continue to get better and better on your way back to 100%.
Yeah, almost there, man.
Almost there.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, feels good.
So we got a lot wrapped up in this episode.
We do.
So we got to get into it. Before that, let's give our Patreon shout outs. We had Willie and Allie Marbar jumped out at our highest level.
Hey, Willie and Allie.
Aliyah Barker jumped out at our highest level.
Thank you, Aliyah.
Jill Perrin.
What's going on, Perrin?
Rhonda Wilkinson Bouvier.
Ooh, Wilkinson Bouvier.
Mary Jean Reiki jumped out at our highest level.
Hey, Mary Jean.
And Ruth.
Good old Ruth.
Kenriette Cole.
Hey, Kenriette.
John Wayne jumped out way higher than our highest level.
Well, how you doing, Pilgrim?
Pilgrim. Chelsea Gilligan.
Hey, Chelsea.
Amy Anderson jumped out at our highest level.
What's going on, Amy?
Greg Johnston jumped out at our highest level.
Well, thank you, Greg.
We had Shauna Murphy.
Thanks, Shauna.
Canadian Cater Tot.
Really? Got some Cater Tot in the house.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Archer.
What's going on, Sarah?
Megan Priscilla.
Hey, Megan.
Becky Schmidt.
Well, thank you, Becky.
Sarah Brown.
Hey, Sarah.
Kim Eldridge.
Well, thank you, Kim.
Well, Amy Pierce.
Hey, what's going on, Amy?
Debbie jumped out at her highest level.
Debbie, thank you.
And Eugene Mullinix jumped out at her highest level.
Gotta like a little Mullinix.
So we appreciate all that new support.
Yeah.
And then we jump into the vault, Gibbs.
Sure.
This week, we selected Carolyn YK.
Well, thank you, Carolyn.
Been with us a long time. We appreciate the new support, the continued support.
Sure do.
We had some great PayPal donations as well. Julie Russiotelli.
Russiotelli.
Or Russiolelli.
I'm going to go with Russiolelli.
Oh, okay. You're just going to leave out four or five different letters.
Yeah.
She actually sent in a very sizable donation. John Crimmin.
Hey, John.
Mary Wiersma.
What's going on, Wiersma?
And Ruthie's Little Things.
Well, Ruthie, we appreciate all of you, even your little things.
It's always the little things that count.
Yeah.
So, Gibbs, right now on True Crime All the Time Unsolved, we're headed to New York to talk about the disappearance of Colin Gillis. This is a case of a college student.
Yeah.
Comes home.
Goes to one of those, spring break, we're home for spring break parties.
Sure.
And
maybe a keg was there.
Maybe, or two. And he goes missing.
Yep. And we'll get into all the whys, wheres, whos, as we do on Unsolved.
Yeah.
But like I said, we're jam-packed today, so I got to ask it. Gibbs, are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
I am.
We're wrapping up our coverage of Martin Bryant and the Port Arthur massacre. And we got a lot to get into. Now, this is part two, so I don't suggest starting here. You can, but what you'll miss is Bryant's background.
Yeah, the lead up.
The lead up, us talking about his mental capacity, all of that. But we'll jump straight to April 28th, 1996. Martin Bryant woke up that morning at 6 a.m. And his girlfriend Petra later told the police that this was very strange. Martin never got up this early. In fact, she said he never set his alarm clock because Gibbs, he didn't have a reason to set an alarm clock.
Right.
He had nothing that he really had to do at any certain time. This was a man with few commitments.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He had a bunch of money.
Every day's a Saturday?
Yes. It was like every day's a Saturday.
Yeah.
Petra left the house around 8 a.m. and it seems as though she was under the impression that Martin was going surfing. And we're going to hear that quite a bit. Several witnesses who met Martin later that day also said he told them he was going surfing. Police know that Bryant left his home at 9:47 a.m. because they later retrieved the time at which he set his alarm system. So he's the last one out the door. He puts the alarm on. Bam. Later on, the police can go back and, you know, figure out what time that occurred.
Right.
He left his home driving his yellow Volvo with a surfboard attached to the roof. And that's another thing that just a ton of witnesses would come out later and say is that, yeah, number one, they saw the Volvo, but they remember seeing this surfboard attached to the roof.
Remember when you used to surf?
I don't, because I never have, because you know I don't like the ocean.
I know. You hate that ocean.
Now, I did surf one time at the water park down the road that has the endless wave pool.
Oh, yeah.
I've tried that before.
How would that go?
It was all right.
Yeah. Still didn't get the itch for it?
No, my coordination is not what it was when I was, let's say, in my late teens to early 20s.
Wow. So no shooting the barrel or whatever they call it?
No, just trying not to bust my you know what.
Yeah.
Now, Martin took with him three semi-automatic weapons. He had the AR-10, the AR-15, and a shotgun. He also had with him thousands of rounds of ammunition. And Gibbs, I think most people know this, but I want to clarify. I want to be clear with everyone what semi-automatic means in case someone doesn't know. Every time you pull the trigger, a shot is fired, right, with a semi-automatic gun.
Right.
So the gun fires as fast as your finger can pull that trigger.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, and you can just do it right in front of you, you can pull that index finger back very quickly.
Right.
And, you know, that's why a lot of people always talk about, okay, well, it's not an automatic weapon, right? Automatic, you just hold it down and bullets spray everywhere.
Yeah.
But you can fire a semi-automatic weapon very rapidly.
Yeah.
And, exactly. And a lot of people can.
So what's the difference between an AR-10 and an AR-15?
So the AR-15 fires a 223 round or 5.56. That's kind of what they call the NATO round.
Right.
The AR-10 is a bit bigger. It's a 308 round. So they're very similar. They look similar. I think, you know, the 10 just fires a bigger bullet. The shotgun was a 12 gauge. Now, a lot of people don't think about shotguns as being semi-automatic, but they can be, right? This is not the pump shotgun that your grandfather had.
Right.
There are a lot of semi-automatic shotguns. People use them to hunt birds and different things. They're used in shooting competitions quite a bit.
So you can even add a magazine to those shotguns in some cases.
Yeah, there are some that are made to hold a magazine, which can hold quite a number of shells. But speaking of magazines, for each of the rifles, Martin had the standard 30-round magazines. But Gibbs, he did something that you often see in movies. He fashioned them together, probably with some kind of very strong tape or adhesive, so that they were joined but facing the opposite way. Have you ever seen this in movies? Basically, what it does is you put the magazine in the rifle.
Right.
once you've fired all of those shots, instead of reaching for another magazine on your person or in somewhere else, all you do is flip it around.
Yeah.
And you can very quickly insert another 30 rounds.
Yeah.
And you see it quite a bit in movies. I'm surprised you haven't seen it as many movies as you watch.
I've seen a lot of movies. I know what you're talking about now that you explained it, though.
He had his bag with him that we talked about in at the end of episode one, but he also took two sets of handcuffs, some rope, a hunting knife, and several containers of gas. So to me, Gibbs, I think when you look at this, it leaves little doubt that he was planning something of terrible proportions. I mean, you don't leave the house in the morning with three semi-automatic weapons, handcuffs, a knife, and, you know, gasoline to go to work.
No.
Well, you might. Most people do not.
Yeah. Your average Joe.
No. Yes. Your average Joe does not. I mean, if you're a soldier of fortune, maybe. As Martin Bryant drove to Port Arthur that morning, he made several stops at businesses along the way. And these were places that he had visited in the past. He made some small purchases at these different shops. I think what's important is that, you know, one business owner said Martin was carrying a large bag with him. That seemed very odd. The other thing that was strange was that some of these individuals said his demeanor was very different. You and I talked about it in episode one. Martin had a habit of going into places, trying to chat people up.
Yeah.
He was always looking for a conversation.
Desperately.
It was said on this day, he wasn't chatty at all. He was much more reserved than what people would have referred to him back in the day as the usual silly Martin. Right. He wasn't acting up. He was kind of stoic.
Right.
As if I've got something going on. I don't have time to act a fool with you or, you know, whatever you want to say. But I think the key thing is these were people that had experience with him. They knew what he was like on a daily basis. And on this day, he was much, much different.
Which looking back, they're going to realize why. In that moment, though, you don't realize what's going on, but they'll look back and say, oh, yeah, now we know why.
Yeah, and I think that happens in a lot of cases, right? Yeah. You know, in the moment, a lot of things don't mean anything because there's no context to it.
Right.
It's just, he might be having a bad day or this or that. Once you find out the context that goes along with it, it's very easy to say, oh, well, no wonder he was acting this way or that way. Martin Bryant had a destination in mind. And we know that it's going to be Port Arthur, but his first stop was at a B&B named Seascape, owned by David and Sally Martin. And this was no random destination. Many have reported that Bryant held a serious grudge against the Martins, stemming from a business deal that he and his father had with them. And there's some gray area here about this business deal. You know, apparently his father, and maybe at some point even Martin, was involved, and they wanted to buy a piece of property from the Martins, but they wouldn't sell.
Yeah.
And there have been some suggestions that Martin felt as though this business deal gone bad contributed to his father's suicide.
That is, of course, if Martin didn't have anything to do with his father's death.
Yeah, and that's a big if, right? We talked quite a bit about that in episode one. So he arrived at Seascape somewhere around noon. He encountered David and Sally Martin, and he killed them both. It happened to be David Martin's birthday. Police interviewed a couple of people later who said they heard a series of shots, and they estimated the time to be somewhere between 12 and 12:30. Interestingly, though, there were no guests at the time this happened. I believe the last guest had left that day around 11 a.m. Now, I'm not saying the B&B was empty. It just, you know, maybe people had gone out to do whatever it is they wanted to do. But after he killed the Martins, Bryant took the keys to the B&B, locked the place up, and left. But outside, he encountered a couple. And, you know, this is a couple who had just driven up. They wanted to check the place out. They thought, okay,
this might be a cool place to stay. They talked to Martin Bryant and asked him, I guess they thought he worked there or something, if they could see the place.
Yeah.
And apparently he said, no, my mother and father are out right now. But this couple later described him to police as, you know, unbelievably agitated. They said he was waving his hands, making these wild gestures as he talked.
Well, luckily they got the heck out of there.
Well, and who wouldn't?
And looking back, they're probably like, oh my gosh.
Now, if you see the pictures of Martin Bryant.
Yeah.
The one thing that always jumps out at me is you wouldn't look at his face and say, oh my gosh, that's a scary guy.
Right.
But he had that really long blonde hair and it always seemed to be wild.
Yeah.
And it made him look a little wild, I always think.
Is it because you were jealous of the long hair?
That's part of it.
Okay.
That's part of it.
All right. I just want to make sure.
But I do think if you saw him and he's gesturing wildly and acting in this very, you know, agitated manner, you'd be like, hey, honey, back up the Volvo.
Yeah.
Turn around.
Let's get out of here.
Let's get the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah. When I saw the pictures I've seen of him, he definitely has a bizarre
look about him.
Yeah.
Well, and we're going to talk about that and some of the pictures that the media used. They took some heat, maybe for some possible enhancements to some of these pictures. We'll talk about that later on.
Remember when you used to enhance your pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's for a whole different thing.
Online to make myself look better? Sure. Yeah. Well, who doesn't do that?
A couple filters here and there.
Filters.
Yeah.
So after this incident, Martin drove into Port Arthur, and he actually conversed with a number of people in and around the area. Gibbs was like, you know, he stopped. He chatted people up. He told a number of people that he was going surfing. He had no real reason to do that. It kind of strikes me as odd, other than the fact that he did like to strike up conversations. Or was he trying to tell as many people as he could that he was going surfing because he knew what he was about ready to do? He thought that was going to give him some type of alibi.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
There's my surfboard on top of my Volvo.
I don't know if Martin Bryant was smart enough to think those types of things through all the way, but maybe in his mind, that was going to be his alibi. He eventually parked his car and headed to the Broad Arrow Cafe. He ordered quite a bit of food. And I read in a couple different places, Gibbs, that it was so much food that people had to open the door for him. And they actually were commenting on how much food he had. And his comeback was that he'd been surfing. He had worked up this great big appetite.
I'm so hungry. I've been surfing all day.
Yeah.
Man, hitting those waves. I got to eat.
So he sat outside and, you know, started eating his food. People later said that he was mumbling a lot while he ate. He appeared nervous. He kept scanning the area, looking around.
That mumbling while you eat always makes me nervous. When I see people doing that at a restaurant or a bar, I try to sit as far away as possible.
What about the mumbling when you're not eating? Because I don't think that's a great sign either if you're just mumbling to yourself.
If you got to do it while you're eating, it just makes it that much more worse.
All right. Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, that's basically what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was also apparently waving his arms around frantically as if he was trying to swat something in the air away from him.
You know, I've done that before where like a little gnat's in front of my face. It won't leave me alone. I'm doing that. But you know, the people around you don't see that. So I'm just saying, I know I've looked weird to people because I've done that.
Would you be waving both your arms frantically in the air over a gnat?
If there's multiple gnats. If it's a gnat attack.
I'm not sure this was a gnat situation.
No, I think it was.
I'm going to go out on a limb.
Something
and say,
a little bit different.
Yes. I don't think it was the same experiences that you've had. Because at the same time, he was making a bunch of racially insensitive remarks about different groups of people.
Wow.
And he's eating by himself, right? It's not like he has a companion. He's mumbling. He's talking out loud, making these very strange comments. You have to picture it all in its entirety and say, yeah, that sounds like it would have been a pretty odd sight.
Yeah, I think I would have said, you know what? Let's get our stuff to go and let's get out of here. I wouldn't want to sit out there.
Eat and walk.
I'd have to get my stuff and get out of there.
I think
take it to go.
Yeah. And again, everybody's a little different. We have the benefit of knowing what's about to happen. So we're probably putting more into this than what those people would have done.
Oh, absolutely.
At the cafe that day. Yeah, they would have viewed it as odd, but nothing probably to be concerned about. Unfortunately, we know there's a lot that they should have been concerned about.
Right.
Because when Martin was done eating, he walked inside the cafe and he put his bag up on a table. So this was somewhere around 1:30 p.m. He opened up the bag and he took out his AR-15. And Gibbs, he just opened fire on the people inside the cafe. And this was not a big place. The tables were very close together. So you had a lot of people kind of concentrated in a very small area close together.
How horrific.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what it must have been like inside that cafe. You know, the noise level as the shots from this rifle rang out, the confusion as people tried to process and figure out what was going on. You know, I think to a lot of people, it's not like you hear something and you see something or you see something and everything really crystallizes automatically, right? For a lot of people, it takes a little while to really process and understand what's going on. And unfortunately, we know in this situation, a lot of carnage happens in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Bryant killed 20 people inside the cafe and he wounded many others. And Gibbs, he didn't care who he killed.
No, he did not.
Men, women, and even children. One stat that I saw said that he fired 29 shots inside the cafe in about 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
29 shots fired, killing 20 people. Now, police would say later that many of these shots were taken at very close range, that he just walked up to people, put the gun essentially right on them and fire.
You know, 29 shots in 2 to 3 minutes is not that hard to achieve.
No, it might sound like a lot to some, but if you really broke it down, it's not.
No.
It's really not at all. The superintendent of the Hobart Police later told the media, "I have never been involved in war, but I don't imagine that it gets much worse than that room. Some people were dead on the floor. Others were dead at the tables, looking as if they were still enjoying their lunch with their meals still in front of them. But they were dead."
I mean, it's just horrific.
It is. And it's one of those things that you can picture in your mind. Now, it's not a good picture. It's not something you want to dwell on because it'll haunt you. And one thing I have to mention, if I haven't already, is that, you know, Port Arthur, it's a tourist attraction type of place. So some people later said that when they heard the shots, they thought it was some type of historical reenactment.
Yeah.
And some of them actually moved towards the gunshots.
Because they thought maybe they were missing out on a show or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Port Arthur was an old penal colony back in the day and then kind of turned into a tourist attraction. Martin Bryant exited the cafe and he began firing at people outside. He killed 4 people outside of the cafe, 3 who were just standing outside and 1 person who was sitting on a tour bus. And I think that kind of tells you about the type of place we're talking about, right?
Right.
They were busing people in, they would get off, they would see the attractions and things like that. But then he made his way back to his car. He got to his Volvo, fired it up, and drove off toward the Port Arthur Highway. But he stopped before he got to the toll when he saw a woman and her 2 daughters. Gibbs, he slowed down, opened up his car door, I think as if to say, "Hey, what's going on? Yeah. Can I help you?
Let me help you here."
And I believe that's what the mom, Nanette Mikhak, believed, that he was offering her help.
Sure.
Instead, he ordered her to get on her knees and he shot her to death. Nanette had in her arms her 3-year-old daughter, Madeline. Gibbs, this guy shot her at point blank range, killing her. Then he hunted down the 6-year-old daughter, Alana, who had run and hid behind a tree. He walked up to her and also shot her at point blank range, killing her.
Yeah. Wow.
This guy is an absolute monster.
Piece of shit.
Yeah. Now, we knew that going in. Yeah,
we did.
Right? We knew, we said it up front, this guy killed 35 people.
Right.
He wounded so many others, that's horrible. But to hear that he gunned down a mother and then executed her 2 very small girls.
To the point that he hunted one down.
Man, I literally want to see you alone with this guy in a room for an hour.
Oh, man, I'd love that.
Now, we're going to talk about what happened, you know, to him later on, but there's a part of me, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening, or at least a part of them that thinks, yeah, this guy deserves Gibby justice.
Give me that opportunity, man.
After that, Martin got back into his car and drove up to the toll booth, and he shot the attendant. But then he focused his sights on a BMW that was driving up to the toll booth. He shot all 3 occupants inside and he dragged their bodies out of the car. Gibbs, he wanted this car. For whatever reason, he saw this BMW and he said,
I have to have it.
I want that.
Yeah.
So what he did was he went to his car, his Volvo. He got all of his guns, his ammo, and his other stuff, and he loaded it into the BMW. Then Bryant drove up the road to a gas station where he encountered a man and a woman driving in their car. He shot the woman, killing her, and he forced the man into the trunk of the BMW.
Yeah.
Essentially, he abducted this man. So at this point, Bryant is driving along the highway in this BMW. He's got a hostage in the trunk. And I guess as he drove, he took pot shots out the window of the car.
Just random pot shots.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was all that random, but he shot at buildings. He shot at passing cars. He definitely shot at anyone he saw. He didn't kill anyone, but he did manage to wound a few people from the car. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning
learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT.
Now, by this point, police had obviously been alerted, right? And they swarmed on Port Arthur. One of the problems at first was that they were told to be on the lookout for a yellow Volvo.
Yeah, which he was no longer in.
Yeah, so they didn't know that he was driving this BMW. Didn't take them long, though, right, to figure out that three people had been killed at the toll booth. It came out a little bit later that he was driving the BMW. And I don't think it was really all that hard for police to track his movements because, like I said, the guy's shooting at people from the car. So people are going to be calling in saying they had been shot at or they were wounded. It was almost like a trail of breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
A Hansel and Gretel type trail of breadcrumbs leading authorities to him. They eventually tracked him back to the Seascape B&B. And when police got there, they found the BMW on fire. So, you know, it's now around 2 p.m. So I think you have to let that sink in.
Yeah. Wow.
All of this carnage in the span of about 30 minutes or so, that's pretty terrifying to think about.
It is. It's a lot of tragedy in a short period of time.
Yes, in a very short period of time. But Bryant was holed up inside Seascape. And at one point, he started firing at the officers who arrived. And essentially, he kept them pinned down for hours. He would just shoot at them anytime they would try to move, change positions, get, you know, to safety. And he wasn't just using the weapons he had. He had found a number of guns that belonged to the Martins.
Yeah. Which he didn't have a problem using those too.
I don't think he would have had a problem using anything. But ballistics would later prove that he used some of those as well to fire on the officers. One very interesting fact that came out in the court transcript is that a reporter called Seascape trying to talk to the owners about what was going on in Port Arthur. And it wasn't just Seascape. This reporter had called a number of businesses trying to get some inside information, right? To get a scoop on what was a very big tragedy. Martin Bryant answered the phone and had a conversation with this reporter that she later said was beyond bizarre. She said that he told her his name was Jamie, but at one point she asked him what was happening. And he said, "What's happening is I'm having lots of fun." Then he said, "But I really need a shower. And if you call me again, I'll shoot the hostage."
He's so strange. So strange on what he's saying.
Well, there's a couple different things there, right? First of all, he's calling himself Jamie, and it won't be the only time he does that. But to say what's happening is I'm having lots of fun. You've killed a lot of people. You've wounded a bunch of others.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you've traumatized a nation and even it extended further than that. So to think in your head that, hey, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You're messed up.
Well, his attitude is, I mean, clearly he's not impacted by what he's done.
Mm-mm. Well, he's not negatively impacted, no, that's for sure.
Exactly.
It's not bothered him. By 4:30, the police had established contact with Martin Bryant. He's holed up inside Seascape. They contacted him through a secure line. I think they gave him a cell phone, is what they did. But at this point, Gibbs, you got to think about it. They really didn't know what was going on. They believed and were being told by Bryant that he held three hostages inside the house, David and Sally Martin, and the man he had abducted from the service station. Bryant also apparently told the negotiators that his name was Jamie. So again, sticking with the Jamie name, sure. He made the police believe that the hostages were alive by telling them that he was feeding them, he was giving them water. In fact, the Martins were dead, and Bryant had already killed the hostage, a man named Glenn Pears. I think not all that long after he took him out of the BMW and got inside of Seascape. But, I mean, what could police really do? Gibbs, they just couldn't charge in there, right? With him threatening to kill the hostages because they had, at that point, no idea that they were already dead.
Well, and they also know that this man needed to be taken very serious because of his actions up to this point. He's not shy of pulling the trigger.
Oh, yeah. These aren't idle threats.
No.
By this point, because you've already killed a large number of people.
Right.
So when you say, if you do this, I'm going to kill a hostage, the police have to believe you're not bluffing because you've already killed a number of people.
Exactly.
So the negotiators continued to talk to Martin throughout the night up until about 9:30. And over that time, he kept asking for a helicopter to take him to the airport, and then he wanted a plane to fly him out. And if he didn't get that, he would kill the hostages. But at 9:30, the battery on the cell phone died because he had failed to put it on the charger. So I'm thinking they gave him a cell phone, they gave him a charger, and they said, look, we're going to talk through this. And he just never charged it up, so they couldn't talk anymore. And pretty much the rest of the night, into the early morning, every now and then, you know, he took shots at the police. He just tried to keep them on their toes, tried to keep them at bay. And then just before 8 a.m. the next morning, police noticed smoke coming from Seascape. And by 8:15, it was engulfed in flames. They heard some gunshots come from inside. And then around 8:25, Martin Bryant came out of the house wearing some dark clothing, and he was on fire. And it was like he tried to sneak out of the house and get away from the police, but didn't make it. And apparently he either removed his clothes or they burned away, because by the time police got to him, he was naked. And he definitely suffered some very serious burns.
Yeah, probably burn off of him.
They arrested him and took him to the hospital.
This guy is unpredictable.
Yeah, unpredictable is a word. There's a lot of different words I think you could use for Martin Bryant. Now, to me, I just wonder how much of it comes from his mental capacity. And maybe we'll touch on a little bit of that later.
Right.
But meanwhile, this house is a full-on blaze. The problem is police and firefighters, they were worried about getting too close. Number one, they had the fear of exploding ammunition. I think even more importantly, they were worried that he had maybe some homemade bombs that he would have triggered to go off, or they would go off in the fire. So they let the house burn.
Well, all that is a legitimate concern. I mean, the ammo igniting is never good.
Later, after the structure burned, police found the burnt bodies of the Martins and Glenn Pear. When they examined the Martins, they could tell that they had been shot prior to the fire. They also knew that Mr. Martin had been stabbed because they found Bryant's knife at the cafe, and it had Mr. Martin's blood on it. And to me, this is very important because, you know, in the very beginning, when newspapers in Australia first started reporting this early on, they had Bryant taking the Martins hostage and killing them after the shootings at Port Arthur.
Right.
I think they just naturally assumed everything started at Port Arthur.
Sure. If you didn't know the back history up until then, you would, I think anybody would assume that.
Yeah, so it wasn't a bad assumption. It was just they were wrong, right? They turned out to be incorrect. Glenn Pear was found handcuffed. He had been shot. And just like the Martins, there was no evidence of smoke inhalation. So authorities knew all three of them died before the fire was even set. They found Bryant's guns in the aftermath of the fire. Police also searched his house. They found his secret piano hiding place that we talked about.
Right.
They found a ton of ammunition and some other incriminating evidence. But I mentioned it. Martin Bryant was badly burned. He was at the hospital. Police really had no luck interviewing him there. It wasn't until July that they were really able to fully question him.
It's a long time.
Yeah, a number of months, it seems like, for him to recuperate. Now, he admitted owning the firearms and abducting Glenn Pears. But he said he hadn't shot anyone in Port Arthur. Yeah, I owned all the guns you found. And ballistically, all that's going to match.
Right.
So, you know, kind of saying that is ridiculous. And yeah, I kidnapped this Glenn Pears, but that was for a totally different reason.
Unrelated.
Unrelated to this mass shooting. You can read the transcripts of his initial interview, Gibbs. They're out there. What I will say about them is he's all over the map. You know, the answers to some of the questions, they just don't make any sense, right? It's kind of like what you would expect from a person with a low 60s IQ.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have the mental dexterity to answer these questions in a coherent manner. There's rambling. There's double talk. There's, hey, that just doesn't make much sense what you're saying.
It just kind of feels like he doesn't understand the severity of his situation.
Well, that is definitely true. So first of all, he did maintain his innocence, right, in his initial questioning. But at one point, they told him that he was going to be charged with 35 murders and a number of attempted murders. And Martin asked, so how many months will that get me? So, you know, exactly to your point, do you really understand the severity? Do you understand what's going on? We're going to charge you with 35 murders. If convicted, you're not going to spend months in jail, buddy. You're never going to see the light of day. But it's like he did not grasp that, or he was playing around with them, one or the other.
Right.
There's only two options. There's quite a bit of audio of Martin Bryant out there to listen to. Obviously, we can't play it all. And I'm sure there were a number of interviews. I do want to play a small clip from a police interview, and then we'll discuss it.
Kidnapped. When you, how did this guy get to get in the boot?
I put him in the boot. He's had the gun.
Which gun did you have?
I had that.
Mr. Warren Holden.
AR-15. See, if people didn't do this, unfortunately, you guys wouldn't have a job.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that, man. Let me tell you.
That one there.
Yes,
that was the one.
This is the one.
It's a sweet little gun.
So I know that's a really short clip, a little hard to hear, maybe for some a little hard to understand.
Yeah.
But, you know, the police officer asked him about putting the guy in the boot. Obviously, for us in the U.S., that's a trunk.
Right.
Right. It's more chilling when you actually see it, because there's a couple of things that really jump out at me. Number one, he said, if people didn't do things like this, you guys would be out of a job.
Yeah, it's like him saying, I'm giving you job security, man.
Yeah.
You should be thanking me. You have a job now because of what I just did. Should keep you busy for a while.
You know, one of the police officers holds up one of the guns he used, and you can hear him say, yeah, that's it. That's a sweet little gun.
Yeah.
But Gibbs, it's his mannerisms in the interview that really kind of jump out at you. He's smiling. He's laughing. You might have heard him almost giggle there at one point. It's as if he's enjoying the attention he's getting. And like you said, doesn't really seem to grasp the gravity of the carnage that he's caused at all. Not one bit.
No. Clueless.
Now, I think at this point, it's a little hard to tell what interviews what. I don't think he's admitted to anything. So even though, yeah, he admitted to, I shouldn't say that, he admitted to abducting that guy. And that's why he's talking about the boot.
Sure.
He admitted that the guns were his. So he's saying, yeah, that's my gun. That's a sweet gun.
Right.
But I don't think at this point he's saying I killed anyone.
I did all that other stuff. Yes. Yeah.
It's still chilling though, to think you're being told that we think you did this and you're going to chuckle, laugh. He does a lot of smiling.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's just, it's not right for the atmosphere. He's not acting in a way that you would expect someone to act in that same situation.
Well, he definitely has some social awkwardness.
Yeah, I think a lot of it goes back to not being able to read social cues, not understanding how to interact with people in a proper manner.
Right.
It's very bizarre. I mean, I encourage people to go out there and watch some of it.
We've seen that in other interviews. You know, I remember we did the one where the woman shot her fiance and she was in the interrogation room and doing handstands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Other bizarre things, you know.
It was Shayna Huber, I think you're talking about. Yeah, very similar, you know, when you talk about Jodi Arias.
Yeah.
Acting in a way that you wouldn't expect. Now, the difference is I don't think either one of those women had the issues that Martin Bryant had. I think they were both pretty intelligent.
Yeah.
They were just acting very strange and doing some bizarre things. Now, we're not going to spend a lot of time on Bryant's trial. He was charged with 35 murders and 20 attempted murders. He was evaluated by professionals and found fit to stand trial. He initially pleaded not guilty to all counts, but then later reversed that decision and pleaded guilty to everything. Because they had so many witnesses that could put him as the shooter. They had video footage from the Port Arthur area showing him shooting, walking around carrying the gun. And of course they had him coming out of the burning house. I think you and I could have won that case against Martin Bryant, even with our diminished legal knowledge.
Yeah, I think I had a real good chance at doing that.
You would definitely have to wear the wig. I don't know if they wear the wig in Australia or not.
Oh, the wig. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
I don't know if they do. But if they do, that'd be a good look on you.
It would be a good look. My golden locks.
Martin was ultimately sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole. And, you know, one of the things I struggle with in this episode, Gibbs, in a case like this, where so many people lost their lives, it's impossible to talk about and provide details about all the victims.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. That's sad.
It is.
But it also shows you just how many people were killed in a very short amount of time. We mentioned it, 35 men, women, and children lost their lives through the actions of Martin Bryant. They were David and Sally Martin, Winifred Applin, Walter Bennett, Nicole Burgess, Chung So Ling, Elva Gaylard, Zoe Hall, Mervyn and Elizabeth Howard, Ron Jerry, Tony Kiston, Dennis Lever, Sarah Lawton, Pauline Masters, Nanette, Madeline, and Alana Mikak, we talked about them, Andrew Mills, Gwenda Neander, Peter Nash, Ing Mo Yi Williams, Anthony Nightingale, Mary Nixon, Glenn Pears, Jim Pollard, Janet Quinn, Kate Scott, Robert and Helene Salzman, Raymond and Kevin Sharp, Royce Thompson, and Jason Winter. To me, that's sobering.
Very.
To read those names out loud, it took a long time.
Yeah.
And I think it just helps it to sink in. How many people lost their lives? And you can't forget about the large number of people who were wounded. Many of them at one point in critical condition.
Yes.
But survived thanks to the great work by nurses and doctors.
All done by one man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to think of the broader impact it had on these individuals, families, friends, peers, coworkers. I mean, it went out and deep, and it was just tragic.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that you bring up. It's like a spider web. It's like a ripple.
Yeah.
Right? A ripple effect.
Yeah.
Yes, you have the victim. You have the victim's families, but then you can just keep going out.
Yeah.
There's other loved ones. There's friends. There's, you know, acquaintances. So when I say 35 and so many more wounded, mm-hmm. you're really talking about thousands and thousands of people directly affected
yeah.
by what Martin Bryant did, not to mention the larger population of people who were saddened or, you know, extremely fearful, and maybe that changed their lives in some way. Based well, you know, on what he did.
Yeah, absolutely. The community as a whole had sure. to feel it and never be the same again.
When you say community, I would probably almost say country.
Yeah.
You know, definitely the community, definitely the state of Tasmania. I would say the country of Australia. I mean, they felt it. They still feel it today. This is still a very raw subject.
Which is evident by just us doing part one. Mm-hmm. And seeing a lot of the comments
sure.
on the different sites that, you know, we have listeners in Australia and Tasmania and, you know, all over. But they all jumped in and said some of them actually lived in Hobart.
Oh, yeah.
And remember that day.
Yeah.
And they still will never forget that. It's like ingrained in their head. They're never going to forget that moment, hearing about it. Some of them actually had people that were in that area when the shots happened. And so that impact, you know, on their lives, they're never going to forget that.
Nope. You know, like I said, still very raw to this day and probably will always be for many, many people. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
There have been a number of things cited as Bryant's reason for doing what he did. You know, I think at the end of the day, we know what happened, but why did it happen? You know, in the period of time leading up to the massacre, he was drinking pretty heavily. There's thoughts that he began to feel more angry, more isolated. He apparently told a neighbor that he was going to do something that would make everyone remember him.
See, that statement right there, anymore, should be an automatic flag to call. I know
you say that, and then I think to myself, okay, what if my neighbor said that? Am I automatically thinking it's bad? What if he's going to do something great? That people are going to remember him by. I think sometimes it's the fact that we already know the ending.
Oh, absolutely. We know the outcome, so now it's easy for me to say.
Yeah.
But
would you do that to a person that you've known for quite a while who you have no thought is going to do something bad? I don't know.
I guess it probably depends on the delivery.
And the person.
Yeah. So if there's no certain delivery and it's kind of like said nonchalantly, probably not. But if it's said with anger, if it's said with, you can tell the guy or female, whoever's telling you this is on a downward spiral, then maybe it should be a concern.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, now you're adding all kinds of stuff into it.
Well, you know, give me a little bit and I'll add more.
There's the resentment that he felt toward the Martins. We talked about that. It's also been said that he held a grudge against the Broad Arrow Cafe because when he was young, they wouldn't let him sell some of his homemade items outside. Again, I saw that in one place. I just think this is one of the big problems, right? It's trying to figure him out because Brian has never revealed, as far as I could find, his true motives for the attacks. I think all of this stuff comes from other people, maybe some people that have analyzed him, but I don't know if he, from his own mouth, has ever said, this is why I did it.
Yeah. And why would he at this point?
There are a few cases prior to the shootings at Port Arthur for which some people believe Bryant might be responsible. In March 1993, a German backpacker named Nancy Grunwald disappeared near Beaumaris Beach. In October of 1995, an Italian student named Victoria Cafasso was found stabbed to death near that area. Police found a witness who said they saw a figure with long blonde hair on the beach that day. They weren't 100% sure if it was a man or a woman. And we've talked about, you know, the pictures of Martin Bryant. If you look at some of them, he had very long blonde hair. I already said it. Sometimes it looked very wild. Yeah. But Martin was known to frequent the beaches in this area to fish and dive. But as far as I can tell, I don't think police have ever tied him to these two incidents. And I doubt they'll ever be able to unless he confesses.
Right.
Very quickly after the shootings, politicians came out stating that gun reform was needed. Newly elected Prime Minister John Howard was at the forefront of saying that Australia needed stricter gun laws. And eventually the government banned automatic and semi-automatic firearms, adopted new licensing requirements, established a national firearms registry, and instituted a 28-day waiting period for gun purchases. But they didn't stop there. They bought and destroyed more than 600,000 civilian-owned firearms, a move that cost them about $500 million. And was funded by raising taxes. But the part that amazed me, Gibbs, is that they did all of this within a few months.
Pretty fast acting.
It happened very quickly.
Yeah, I don't think that could ever happen around here.
I think it would be tough. And there, like I said, there were a lot of people in Australia that were very opposed to it. Because I think they, if I remember correctly, they had changed some of the laws like in 1991.
Yeah.
Obviously not as strict as they ultimately made them, but they also didn't make it retroactive, I believe. So yeah, some things maybe became illegal or you had to register them, but they didn't make you turn them in. So people still had them. Now they went to the step of not only strengthening everything, but also saying, hey, you need to give these up. We'll buy them from you, but you got to give them up.
That's where they were smart, is to say they would buy them because the... Just do the right thing and turn them in?
Yeah, people aren't going to do that.
No, no. You'll get a few, but you're not going to get the volume they had, you know. So by paying people for them, that's if that's what you want to do, if you want to get those guns in, you have to you know, reimburse people for what they paid for them or reasonable cost.
And I know places like New York City has done that.
Yeah.
They have paid for guns, basically saying, hey, turn in your guns, we'll pay you for them.
Yeah.
But I don't think, Gibbs, we could cover this case properly without talking about some of the conspiracy theories that have cropped up over the years. The biggest one, as I understand it, is that the shootings were set in motion to bring about these gun reform changes that we just talked about. So I guess there are people that believe the government was actually involved in this. Now, there's always conspiracy theories, right? When you have a big tragedy like this.
Always.
But that's a doozy, you know, trying to implicate the Australian government and saying, yeah, we orchestrated something that killed 35 of our own citizens so that we could pass these gun reform laws.
Including women and children.
And yeah, including small children.
Yeah.
Some people point to the fact that the changes were proposed so quickly, and they were. I mean, within, I think, less than 2 weeks of the shooting, the proposed gun reform was already, you know, started making its way, being talked about.
It's almost like they had it prepared.
That's what the conspiracy theorist would say.
Yeah. Well, here in the United States, if it happened that fast, I'd be like, maybe. Because nothing gets...
We can't get anything done that fast.
Exactly.
Some people point to the precision of some of the shots that killed people at Port Arthur, claiming there was no way that someone like Martin Bryant could have pulled those off by himself. So to me, that kind of reminds me a little bit of the conspiracy theories surrounding the JFK assassination.
Right.
I guess there are people that believe Martin Bryant was set up as a patsy, like some believe that Oswald was set up as a patsy.
Yeah, but with Martin, I think, because there was some survivors, that they would have maybe said, oh, there was more than one shooter, or it didn't look like him. You think that there'd be some of that conversation going on.
Well, there are people that believe many of the survivors of the massacre that day were intelligence officers sent in to help manage the chaos.
Okay.
So,
wow.
I don't know. Another claim that's been made is that people point to the fact that Tasmania ordered a hearse in 1995 that was capable of carrying 16 bodies at a time, when their average murder rate was, I guess, one murder every 2 months at the time.
Well, that can definitely fuel some conspiracies there.
Now, I'm not saying that's a fact. I'm not saying any of these are facts.
Yeah.
Obviously, these are just things that I read online as I went down the rabbit hole, as you and I often do. But it is a part of this case, this conspiracy theory angle. There are people that believe it. There are people that believe 9/11 was a conspiracy. There are people that believe the Oklahoma City bombing was a conspiracy. Almost any big event, tragedy like that, you're going to have somebody or groups of people that will blame it on the government or say it was, you know, this or that.
Some of the school shootings have been thought by some
to have been a conspiracy. The other thing that I found interesting is that the newspapers and media in Australia, they came under fire for their reporting of this case. I kind of mentioned it earlier, but you know, some were accused of enhancing photographs of Martin Bryant to make him look more evil, like digitally enhancing his eyes, doing different things, I guess.
Yeah. He did look evil.
He did look evil. There was, I think, some uproar maybe over the posting of photographs of some of the bodies, if I remember. But Gibbs, in wrapping up this case, Martin Bryant was 28 years old when he carried out his shooting spree. In part one, we detailed out his childhood. He definitely had a low IQ. He had a host of issues interacting with people socially. There were a lot of reports that he had been depressed, had been drinking heavily. He had the guns and he had the ammunition. That part's not in question.
Yeah.
Putting the conspiracy theories aside, it's an unbelievably tragic case, one that still to this day haunts many Australians. It led to some gun reform, which, again, from what I read, many Australians were for, but many were also against because they didn't want to give up some of their rights. That's an argument, like you said, that we have here in the US all the time. What I do think is undeniable based on some of the research that I saw is that the mass shootings rate, the homicide rate, and the suicide rate by firearms, all of that has gone down since the changes. And I don't know how it couldn't, right? If you take the ability of people to have guns away, those rates are going to go down.
Yeah.
What I didn't look at and what I'm always curious about is, okay, does that mean that homicides are then carried out by other means? Or is the homicide rate just down?
Right. Is it down by use of firearms, or is it
down altogether?
Altogether.
Yeah. Because obviously there's a lot of different ways to kill people if that's what you want to do.
Well, yeah, we know that. We've talked about so many.
But for me, I think Martin Bryant was somewhat of a ticking time bomb. I really do. I think it was just a matter of time before he did something drastic. I think he warned some people of that.
Yeah, I think once his lady friend was no longer around, and whatever he did or didn't do to his dad, but once his dad was also out of the picture, I think at that point, that's when the time bomb really started ticking.
Well, you and I talked about it in episode one, right? Those were the two people that probably most kept him somewhat grounded.
Right.
I think without them, he was just flying free. He had nobody to kind of keep him in check.
Exactly.
Keep him grounded. But as in all cases, it's easy to question after the fact who could have or should have done something about it. Brian has tried to end his life in prison more than once over the years. He's now 53 years old and is housed in the Risdon Maximum Security Prison near Hobart. You and I have done some cases in Australia. I think we have at times questioned the length of sentences,
right,
in Australia. You know, he was given life without parole. This is such a huge case.
Yeah.
I don't think they will ever let this guy out. I just don't see it happening because of the magnitude.
Right. The impact it had on a community, a nation.
I think the whole nation would riot.
Yeah.
If they were to let Martin Bryant out of prison, or they might not have a gun, but somebody's going to take it into their own hands.
Yeah.
To do something bad to this guy.
Hopefully, you know, he just needs to rot away right there.
But that's it, Gibbs, for our coverage of Martin Bryant and the Port Arthur massacre. We've got some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. It's Chloe calling from Norwich in the UK. I just wanted to give you guys a call because I absolutely love your podcast. I've listened to every episode, and it brightens my Monday mornings, to be honest. I'm not really into unsolved crime. I always feel like I need to know what happens. So I haven't moved on to other podcasts yet, but I may do. But yeah, I also wanted to call because I wanted to give you a case suggestion. The case is the murder of Justin Back, and it sparked my interest in true crime, actually. And I'd love you guys to cover it, especially because if it's local. But yeah, just want to say I love you guys. And Gibby, I'd absolutely love for you to try and imitate my accent. That would make my day as well. But yeah, keep up the good work, guys, and keep your own time ticking.
I'm good at doing British accent, but I don't know if I can do that accent at all.
I don't know why that cracked me up so much. Her accent was not what I would think of as heavy.
No.
I think it was kind of subdued as far as some British accents go.
Yeah, for her region that she lives in.
What region is that?
Did she say it was Cornish?
You asking me?
I don't remember.
Now,
they all, you know, like Liverpool, you know, chicken. They have a really, when they say, you just don't say chicken, they say chicken. It's different.
Okay.
So depending on where you're at, you know.
Right. But you acted like you knew where she was at. And now it comes out that you do not.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
So her voicemail was longer. Some part I had to cut out for time. But the case she mentioned, she said it was in Ohio.
Hmm.
So we need to check that out.
I thought it sounded
out.
Familiar when she said that, you know.
It didn't to me, but we need to check it out.
Hey, you guys. Mike and Gibby. You guys are cracking me up. My name is Ruth Graham. And you guys are just making me laugh so much. And I like it because I used to watch the ID channel a lot. And my husband did not like it because I'd get nightmares. And you guys give so much a lighter aspect to it. Yes, it's a sad topic, but it's so much lighter when I listen to you guys. And I laugh so much with Gibby. Yeah. But anyway, I just want to say I love you guys so much. And you make me laugh every single day. Keep your own type ticking. Love you guys.
Well, thank you so much. And you know what? Gibby makes me laugh every single day as well.
That's because Mike tees him up for me.
Well, you know, she said something there, right? The ID channel, very straightforward, very serious.
Sure, yeah.
what we're talking about is very serious.
Very much.
And we try every now and then when it makes sense to lighten it up. It's tough.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about such tragic events, you want to be very careful.
Yeah.
And we always try to be careful. But if we can lighten it a bit or where it makes sense, we will try.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Casey. I have been listening to your podcast since the beginning. I love listening to all true crime podcasts. So I have a case, a guy that I actually dated when I was in the military. His name is Marcus Hofferberg. He was hired to kill one of his friend's wives. It's kind of crazy. I found out about it well after the fact. And I mean, he lived with me and my children just 2 years prior to him doing this. So it was super shocking. But it'd be interesting to find out all the details on it. I love your guys' podcast and can't wait to hear more. Thank you.
Well, we'll definitely write that down, but that is scary.
That is scary.
Because you think you know someone. Obviously, you thought you knew them well enough to allow them to live in the house with you.
Around your kids.
And then you find out a couple years later they're capable of this. Scary. That's scary.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. My name's Joe. I've been listening since September of 2019, and I just had to call in after listening to Martin Bryant, part one. You guys were talking about horse loat, which I got a pretty good laugh about because I used to own horses when I was younger, and we would float their teeth, which is basically a dental procedure. So nothing near to what y'all guessed, but I thought it was hilarious. Your suspicious hand thing, that is from Parks and Recreation. Also hilarious show. I'm not going to chant that for you because frankly chant freaked me out. Also wanted to say go blue. I'm from Michigan, so sorry, not sorry. I hope y'all have a great day and thanks so much for the podcast. We love you guys. Keep your own time ticking.
Okay. So that may be correct here in the US, but right. I looked it up, Gibbs, and a horse float is a trailer.
Yeah.
In Australia.
I can't tell you
how many. We've got a ton of emails and
show me the trailers down there, yep. What they look like. And
so we were pretty close. I think I said trailer and you said something else.
I did say something else.
But you were pretty close.
So.
But I've heard that too, float teeth. I don't really understand what that means.
Right.
Obviously, that maybe is a U.S. term, but
yeah.
A horse float in Australia is just a trailer that they, I don't know why they call it a float. But maybe it's like a float in a parade. Why do they call those floats? Because it looks like they're floating.
Floating. Did she say what I thought she said it towards the end?
Yeah, go big blue.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you can say that at this point in time.
I don't think they won anything this year, her team.
They might have won one game.
Yeah, I think it's like the last year for the coach. I think they're probably going to let that coach go up there.
Maybe. No disrespect.
Well,
we still love you.
Yeah.
But we got to stick up for our Buckeyes.
We do.
Gibbs, we had a lot of mailbag. Brother and sister fans, Steve and Bobby, they sent us some snacks. They sent t-shirts.
Awesome.
One for me that says, "Hey Gibbs, how you doing?" Yours says, "Hey man, I'm doing good, man," which really cracked me up.
Yeah.
And they sent me a Gacy bobblehead.
Awesome.
To go with the BTK one that they sent last year.
Yeah.
So it's like a yearly thing. I get a bobblehead.
I see it right there too.
And it's really cool.
Yeah.
He's dressed up as Pogo.
Cool.
Gibbs, you got a K-Bar Spork.
Yeah.
And I got a Star Wars Pop, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Problem is no name inside. I feel like someone emailed me, but now I can't find the email. So email me again.
Yeah. Let them know so we can give you a shout out.
And also no name on a package with a whole bunch of those awesome Duke's sausages.
Yeah.
So let me know about that.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.